Marshall Cook is a great teacher of writing. And you know what? Along with being a great teacher of writing, he's one of those guys that's a good practitioner as well. And he has a new book out. It's called Obsessions. That's the title. It's the fourth book in his Monona Quinn mystery series, and I've had a chance to read all of them and enjoy every edition when it makes it to my desk. So I'm really pleased to have him in to talk about the book itself and to talk with him about writing. He certainly teaches a lot. He's a professor in the Division of Continuing Studies in the Department of Liberal Studies and the Arts at the UW-Madison. He last year, he received the Van Hise Outreach Distinguished Teaching Award, so that gives you an idea of how good he is at what he does. He has a book signing launch for Obsessions at 6 p.m. this evening at Bleaked for Murder. Or booked Bleaked for Murder. Booked for Murder. The publisher is Bleak House Books. There I go. Now I've got that straight. He'll be at Booked for Murder tonight at 6 o'clock on University Avenue in Madison to kind of launch the book. So really pleased to have him with us. And certainly if you have questions about the series, the Monona Quinn series, about this book, about writing, we hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call. Marshall, welcome back.
Well, thank you. It's delighted to be here with Iron Man Mueller. Doesn't let pneumonia slow him down. Here he is.
I tell you what, writing, you've been writing for your whole life, pretty much.
Pretty much, yep.
Yeah. Is it in your bloodline, or is it...
I think it must be, you know, they haven't spotted that on the DNA chain yet, but there's a picture of my grandfather taken when he was very young, and I've got it on my desk, and people see it, and they think it's me in one of those old-timey studios, you know, where they dress you up, and Granddad was a writer and an adult ed teacher and an editor. And I think I got it from Granddad.
That's great. And you've had a lot of influences over the years, obviously. And Packard was telling me that the Hardy Boys were a big influence on you.
Me and a lot of other people. I think, yeah, the first book I actually ever made it all the way through, I mean book with words, you know,
yeah.
Not just pictures,
yeah.
Was a Hardy Boy book. And I was absolutely hooked on it. And a buddy of mine had lent it to me. And when he took it back, he said, "How'd you like it?" I said, "God, it was great." And he said, "Well, you want to read another one?" I said, "There's another one? I didn't know you could do that. You know, you get to use the same characters." So I read them all. I even read Nancy Drew in between, you know, when I was waiting for Hardy Boys, and they were good, too.
Well, you've written a lot of books. You've written how-to works on writing and things on time management. But so sort of... fiction? Did fiction come after, you know, sort of evolve from that, or what? How did you get into the fiction business?
Publishing fiction came later, but it's what I've always wanted to do, and it's what I allegedly learned about in college. And you know, I knew I wanted to write novels from I think before I could read them, but I got into the nonfiction. You know, I don't want to use the word easy with publishing. Those of you out there who try to get things published, you know it's tough. But there's a much bigger market for nonfiction. And I was freelance article writing at the time, and it was sort of a natural outgrowth of that. And I didn't think I was going to like it because I like doing fiction so much.
Yeah.
But I love it. I mean, it's writing, it's creative, it's fun too. The only trouble is you can't make the stuff up. And that I found that very inhibiting.
Nice to be able to make things up.
Oh, it's wonderful. If you need a plot element, you just cook it up and fit it in there.
Well, now, how did the Monona Quinn series develop for you? How'd you first come up with the idea for Monona Quinn?
I'm not sure. You know, it's just how the way things stir around in the soup up there. I love mysteries. I love the whole community newspaper life and the people who do it and the small town aspect. And it finally occurred to me, you know, well, gee, you've read mysteries all your life. You love them. Mm-hmm. Maybe you should try writing one. And I knew I didn't want to do cops and I didn't want to do detectives, you know, police procedural, anything like that, which I really know nothing about. So I knew it was going to be what they call an amateur sleuth, somebody who keeps getting involved in crimes who isn't a crime fighter. And I thought the natural person for that would be a newspaper editor, community newspaper editor, mm-hmm. because they're involved in everything already, and they're natural snoops, and they know how to ask questions. And once I decided that, I realized that it really ought to be a woman, because 80-90% of community newspaper editors are women. It's mm-hmm. because it's a job that demands high intelligence, tremendous energy, and it doesn't pay well. So consequently, we have women in those jobs. So I decided, well, I'll give it a go. And I was very nervous about writing from the point of view of a woman. But, you know, lo and behold, it turns out you're writing from the point of view of a human being other right. than yourself, which is what fiction writers are always doing. And I got to feel quite comfortable with it. I like her.
Yeah, she's a nice person.
She is a nice person, very smart person.
And when you mentioned community journalism, I thought of my old community journalism professor that I took classes from, Les Hawks.
Oh, yes.
From the UW-Madison. And you're right. Being a community journalist is a lot of work.
Oh, it's hard work, yeah.
It's hard work. You don't make a lot of money, but it's sort of like being in extension in a way. There's a service aspect.
Yes. Or it's a little like farming, I think, in that it's yeah. a life. It's not just a job. It's a life.
Yeah. But did you pattern Monona after anybody in particular, or was it she a combination of people?
Combination. Bits and pieces of people I know, people I've read about. Some of the newspapery aspects of it came from, you know, editors that I've known and worked with and talked with. But she is, you know, I couldn't point to any person in the world and say that's her.
Well, we have callers waiting to talk with you. Let's go to the phones. Miranda and Madison, you're first, and then we'll go to Roland after that. Miranda, hi.
Well, hi. Of course, I had to call in.
Hi, Miranda.
Hello. I just wanted to actually ask you, Mr. Marshall, about School of the Arts. And I actually had the privilege of working up there a couple of weeks ago. And
you have the privilege of being the director of the program.
And one of the things that kept coming up is your wonderful teaching style in writing.
Oh.
And how you were accessible to everybody, all skill levels. So I wanted you to talk a little bit about that.
I know you can't see this, Miranda, because Larry doesn't have the gym cam on his head here or anything, but I am wearing my School of the Arts shirt today. Uh-huh. And in fact,
well,
Obsession...
look at that.
There it is. You can see it now. And Obsessions does borrow a little bit from the whole School of the Arts motif. It is about a writing conference up in the North Woods of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And I love teaching up there. As you know, Miranda not only has the privilege of working up there, she has the privilege of directing the whole thing and making it work and having to handle all the problems that come up. So,
with your teaching. The only problem I had this last time was explaining to people that it wasn't my decision you weren't there. It was yours, and you had other obligations like publishing a book and things. But
I told everyone you fired me.
Everybody.
Well, I know one year the trouble you had with me is you had to come in and tell me to be quiet because I was being too loud and bothering the class next door. But Rhinelander, the School of the Arts is a wonderful experience, folks. If you've got any interest in writing, painting, dancing, acting, and you just want to try it out in an absolutely safe atmosphere, spend a week at the School of the Arts next summer and you'll love it.
I really did call to have you talk about your teaching and how you are accessible to so many different skill levels, and here you are a published author, because I did have people over and over and over coming, and from the people who were just curious to the advanced, and I really wanted you to talk about that type of, you know, how it is that you're such a good teacher and author, because those two don't always go hand in hand.
Well, they don't, but they should, I think. I think the fact that I'm actively doing it all the time, I don't know if the expression is keeps me honest, but you know, when people tell me about the problems they're having, I understand because I have all those problems too. And, you know, when the process isn't going well, I can relate to that. And I have tricks that I use that I try to share with them. And I think the fact that I'm doing it all the time probably makes me a better teacher.
Yeah, I probably would agree with that. I know just from I teach broadcast classes here mm-hmm. on campus, and I think it helps to be able to say, to my class, well, this happened to me on the radio today,
or
to just to be able to recognize why they're having problems in certain areas.
I know with writers, if they've made a mistake in their manuscript, there is nothing they can do that I haven't done at least once. So, you know, I can tell them about it from that point of view.
Thanks, Miranda.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263. Give us a call if you have a question for Marshall Cook, author of the fourth book in the Monona Quinn mystery series, Obsessions is the title. And we're talking with him about the book and about writing. And Roland in Eau Claire is up next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. Yeah, I've got an interesting situation. I wrote a children's story, which is ready to come into print now. It's about two mice that bring revival to an old country church. And I've been in seven foreign countries now as a civilian contractor with the Air Force fixing computers with missile warning satellite tracking stations.
My goodness.
So I'm getting ready now to write a second book for my grandkids entitled My Grandpa Sure Has a Lot of Stories to Tell. I've got a 100+ on tap to start writing about. And I've also developed some math card games, so I'm going to be doing some free math seminar workshops around the country. And I'll display my books along with my other math material as I go around the country. So I'll be it'll give me a way to actually get the books out in front of people.
Absolutely.
As well. And so I'm really looking forward to getting involved with this and having my grandkids see what Grandpa's been up to all his life. And so anyway, I'm going to, there's a company nearby here that the one bid I've got right now is for $900, they'll produce 300 copies for me for $1.89 a copy, and I can then market it, and this will be in paperback, but it'll market then for $4.95.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to be just looking probably at publishing along kind of that way, but I was just wondering if your guest has any thoughts for me on the approach that I'm using. Does anything strike him in particular about what I've what the way I'm going to go about it?
Well, I think the fact, Roland, that you have access to an audience is really crucial, because self-publishing is a great thing, but when you do it, you've got to be distributor, publicist, and marketer, and the whole deal. So if you can get out there in front of people, talking, relating to them, and have the book with you, that's the best way to get attention to it.
Yeah. Getting in front of people, that's the important thing. Roland, thank you very much, and good luck. Good luck with the book.
Absolutely.
Marcia in Grafton, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Marcia.
Good morning. I would like some tips on time management, how to get yourself in front of the paper or the computer screen.
Ha! Well, that's the one that there's really no tip for. That's the do it. The starting is always the toughest part, Marcia. I don't care what you're doing. And after all the, 19 decades or whatever it is that I've been writing, there's still that difficulty in confronting the blank screen. But what I have found is if you can discipline yourself, and I think creativity is there's a large component of discipline to creativity. If you can have a regular time, if you can do it often, 5-6 days a week, if you go to the same place every time and that's all you do there. In other words, if it's writing, you've got your little writing place, be it a desk, or I used to write down in the basement behind the furnace, but wherever it is, that's your writing place. You get there same time every day. And all of the, I won't say it ever entirely goes away, but all the futzing and anxiety and, I'm not ready. I better go sharpen my pencils or something. That stuff tends to fall away. And Marcia, I'll tell you, I've been doing that so long that now I'm able to just go up. My son moved out of the house, so I've got an office now, which is very nice. But I go and sit down at the computer, and I'm ready to go. And I just start working.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I hope it helps.
Yeah, and I've had different authors on talking about that, and some They get up early. They'll get up at 5:30 in the morning, and they'll write for 1 hour. Or you know,
that's me, pretty much. That's
yeah,
what I
you
do.
Just get up and write for an hour, and try and do it 5 to 6 days a week.
Yep.
And you don't have to. Some authors do like to, you know, have at it for 4, 5, 6, 7 hours, but for a lot of authors, that doesn't work real well.
And it's tiring.
It's tiring, yeah.
It doesn't look like you're doing anything, but for some reason, it's very fatiguing.
Yeah, absolutely. Marcia, thanks again for calling. Marshall Cook, our guest today, he's the author of the fourth book in the Monona Quinn series, Obsessions is the title, talking with him about the book and also about writing. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about writing with author Marshall Cook, who has authored the fourth. Well, he authored the first.
The three, too,
yeah, you wrote the other three, too. I should get that in there as well. The Monona Quinn series, mystery series, Obsessions is the latest, published by Bleak House Books. If you have a question or comment about the books or about writing, give us a call at 800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. You come to us by way of California. You were educated at Stanford, I believe.
Right. Right.
And came here because...
Because that's what everybody asked me. It's been 29 years now, and I feel like a total native of the area. But we were living in Napa, California at the time, my wife and I and our son, and you know, beautiful, beautiful place. But it was one of those, I don't want to say it's a midlife crisis, but it's one of those points where, you know, we both liked our job. We loved Napa. Everything was fine, except for we wondered, you know, is this going to be it for our lives, or do we want to try
something else,
different lifestyle? So, boy, we sure did. and actually, we didn't come for my job. We came for my wife's job. She had a wonderful job with the Diocese of Madison, and I was just a house husband, stay-at-home daddy bum for a while, and you know, came out here looking for work.
All right.
But we're very glad we did. I mean, it's just been wonderful.
29 years ago. Oh, my goodness.
First couple of winters were a little dicey. a little scared I wasn't going to live through it. But
oh, man. Well, this new book involves, as you mentioned earlier, involves a writing workshop
right
in northern Wisconsin. And it does it have some roots in your own writing workshop experiences then?
Oh, sure. And I've taught there for years. I've taught at a number of workshops. We have a couple of them in Madison during the summer that folks might be curious about, and they can certainly contact me about those. And, you know, other places, I got to be the keynote speaker in North Platte, Nebraska, which not everyone can say. But, you know, I've been to a lot of writing conferences, and, you know, I think it's a mistake for writers to write about writers, you know, like write about the trials and tribulations of a novelist who has writer's block, you know, and nobody else cares.
Yeah.
But this was simply a really good motif, I thought, for a murder mystery, and especially in the North Woods of Wisconsin, because you can see that being a little bit mysterious.
Yeah.
And frankly, I had killed off a bunch of people in Monona's little Wisconsin town, and I was getting to the Jessica Fletcher dilemma, you know. I'm not going to have anybody left in town to murder here pretty soon. So for the third book, I got her down to Iowa to her sister's farm, and for the fourth book, I got her up to northern Wisconsin so we could kill some other people.
Yeah, and well you killed somebody that was kind of a vile character anyway to begin with.
A pompous jerk, yes. the writer in residence at this particular writer's conference, and he's just there for the money and to exploit the students if he can. And he's actually got writer's block, so he needs something else to do because he's not writing. And you know, there used to be an expression in the Old West, he deserved killing. I don't want to say that, you know, that's too far, but I don't think anybody wept bitter tears that he was the victim.
Are there a lot of authors like that out there?
Oh, heavens no. We're all wonderful people. Actually, Larry, I'll tell you, we Krista Smith directs a program here called the Writers Institute. And we've had some pretty heavyweight writers come to it. I think the first year we had Elmore Leonard, who's as big as they come. And at least the people who are willing to come to writers' conferences and to talk with beginners tend to be just the nicest people and open and quite willing to share their experiences. But every once in a while, you meet one that might be a tad self-absorbed, and that's the case with this character, definitely.
Yeah, it surely is. And fortunately, he doesn't last long.
No. We only see him in two scenes, and then we're looking for his body for most of the rest of the book. So we don't have to put up with him very long.
When you write, do you know when you write a story like this, a book like this, how it's all going to turn out before you start, or what?
I've got two answers to that. For those of you who are starting out trying to do this and you want tips on how to do it, my tip would be to outline first and to know who the killer is. And I don't do that with mysteries. I outline everything else I write, but I don't do it with the fiction. And a couple of times I have changed my mind several times throughout the course of the book, and that's terrible because you have to go back and rip it up and, you know, replant clues and all of that. And a couple other times, I'll give a little plug to my editor at Bleak House, Allison Jansen. She's a wonderful editor. And a couple of times, she very nicely, you know, had read the manuscript and very nicely said, but the person who did it, I don't think they did it. And the first time she did that, I said, well, who did? And she said, I don't know. It's your book. But, you know, she sort of put me back on myself and to rethink it. And she was right. And I think I came up with a much better plot twist at the end. And actually for Obsessions, she thought that the one I had doing it shouldn't have been the one to do it. And I rethunk it, and it came out much better, much, much better. But it's a messy way to do it. I'm a very messy fiction writer.
Yeah. What's the strategy for having to go back and rewrite would be?
Well, I'm going to do that anyway. I go back and rewrite a lot. I'm of the kind of catharsis school of rough draft. You know, I just let it roll while it's rolling. But that means you got to go back and do a lot of rewriting and make sure you haven't changed people's names on the way through the book and things like that. Sometimes bigger things.
Here's a little sidelight. There's another book out with the same title, Obsessions.
Yeah, and there's a whole line of perfume, I think.
Yeah, is there a problem with similar titles? Is that?
Well, there's no legal problem. You can't trademark or copyright a title. You don't want there to be any confusion, so you right. don't want to have that happen. And you'd be pretty stupid if you wrote a book called Moby Dick. Let's face it. I mean, you would not fare well with the comparisons. Or, you know, Love Story, somebody did that, you know. But the fact that there's another Obsessions out there was a coincidence, and I hope there's no static out there. I certainly hope nobody buys mine thinking it's the other one. But, you know, if you just stop and pick it up and read the blurbs and look at the dust jacket, you generally know what you're getting.
When you work with an editor, now here, you know, you're an accomplished writer and you've taught writing. Is it tough to work with an editor?
Actually, the more I have taught writing and worked with other writers, I think the better I've gotten with working with other editors because I've come to appreciate them more. I started out like a lot of people do. You know, this is my art. Don't touch it. You know, I don't want to change a word of it. And that's really stupid and counterproductive. And I've just had so many good experiences with editors who have helped me. Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the basic ways they do it is they catch you in your pratfalls. And they say, did you realize that you've got this character doing this here? And then in the next chapter, he's doing this and he couldn't possibly be doing that. You know, well, no, you miss stuff like that. You get too close to it. But big things, too, just the whole concept of the book and how you're looking at it and how you're approaching it. And then I don't know how it is with other mystery writers, but when I finally get done with a mystery or think I'm done with a mystery, I have no idea whether it's going to work or not. I am so close to it. I've gone through, you know, clues and false clues and red herrings and setups and all that stuff. And I don't know if someone's going to know who did it on the first page or they're going to get to the last page and say, nah, that couldn't be. So, you know, you need some help. You need a good set of of eyes and a good experienced editor to help you.
Is there, you mentioned the clues, red herrings, is there some sort of template for putting those kinds of things? How do those things develop as you write a story?
Sometimes they develop by, I think the subconscious helps you. You know, in one of the Monona books, I had a guy who had a Spanish surname and spoke with a Spanish accent, Latino accent. And towards the end of the book, I realized that there could be this wonderful clue based on the fact that someone would misspell a word that he had pronounced because of the way he pronounced it. And it just fell into place. And that was just lucky. But with a lot of it, you plot it out and you have to hide the clues in plain sight. You know, they got to be there so a reader could pick them up. But you don't want them to notice that they're actually clues. So you do things like, you underplay them. You make something else in the scene seem to be much more important. It's a casual mention. It's there, but you have no idea at the time that it's going to be really significant later on. Because what you want, the trick is you want what I call the double O response at the end. You want readers to be surprised and go, oh, but then you want it to be completely plausible. So the next thing they say is, oh yeah, I should have seen that coming. You know, if you can do that, it's worked.
There's an author who I won't mention who's sold millions of books, but I've discovered after reading a few of his books that there was always, in his situation, there was always a guy who was introduced early in the book, first, sometimes in the first chapter, sometimes in the second chapter, and then never mentioned again. And I got to the point, well, okay, I knew there's the guy that did it.
It's like a tell in poker, huh? You've got this guy's tell now.
And so I quit reading his books because, in part, because I know who did it. And
it's, I hope I haven't run into the problem yet, but I would love to be on my 58th Monona Quinn book, you know, I Should Live So Long, and have that problem of freshness. Have I already done this? Am I falling into a pattern? That kind of thing. And there are some series authors that I have read where I think it has really become a problem. They've gotten stale. And others are just amazing in their ability to keep it fresh. And I think part of that is their character evolves. You know, we keep learning new things about Sue Grafton's character, you know, even though she's up to S or T or whatever it is in the
series. Pretty well through the alphabet.
and she's pledged to go all the way to Z. So,
well, and she's, and she does bring out something fresh.
Yeah, the character keeps evolving, and that makes it nice.
Do you, we talked about this, I talked about this with an author a week or just not too long ago, but with a series of books, and I could get your take on this, there are always the people like me, for example. I've read all four of the books. So there's this question of how much background do you have to give in a book, in a series book? Let's say you're on your fourth or fifth one, or even your second one, so that somebody who hasn't read the other ones will know enough, but you're not going to bore the person who has read all the other.
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's one of the things you really have to deal with. You mentioned the Hardy Boys early on. That was all freelance work off of outlines. You know, these were all anonymous freelancers doing it, and the outlines were very strict. And one of the things that Edward Stratemeyer, the guy who was this syndicate of young adult fiction, but one of the things he said was, in the first chapter you must allude to the previous book, and in the last chapter you must allude to the upcoming case by name. So that was built in. I want to make sure that somebody can pick up the fourth book and be fine with it. You know, in other words, that it'll stand alone and you don't have to have the background. But I will allude to things that have happened. And Monona and her husband Doug have built, you know, some history through the first three books. And I will allude to that. And the people who get it, who have read the previous books, I think It's a little bit like if you get an allusion in a literary book, you think, ah, I know what he's talking about. How smart am I? You know, I get it. But the book itself cannot depend on that. You have to be able to enjoy and get into the current book without knowing any of the allusions to the last one.
In some ways, the mentions are a good marketing ploy.
Sure. That's why Stratemeyer wanted it. And in fact, Stratemeyer would launch all these series. And we're talking Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew, Rover Boys. I mean, he had 36 series going at the same time at one point. And he would actually launch the first three books all at once so that the first book could allude to the second book. The second book could allude back to the first book. You know, he always had that going on.
Wow. And I think I have been, I know that I have gone back and purchased books from authors when they made a comment somewhere halfway through where they're talking about how somebody got injured or, and I thought, oh, that's kind of intriguing. And I think I'll go back and get that earlier edition. So it's sort of
somebody has a limp and you wonder where it came from. And, well,
and they make some
two.
Little reference to it. It's kind of a vague reference, but it's a, you know, it occurred in a previous book. So,
and it works the other way, too. I actually didn't know where Monona and her twin sister, whose name is Madison, I didn't know where their names had come from until the third book. And as I got into it, their mother is involved in the third book, and she tells the story to her little grandchild about where those names came from. And so, you know, for the first two books, I didn't know either, really.
All right. So now you've finished this book, and you're on to... Are you on to another Monona Quinn already?
I'm not on to a Monona. I've got one in my head. I know what I want to do with it. I'm writing a so-called mainstream now and a couple of nonfiction books. I'm always working on stuff.
So it doesn't bother you then to talk about one book while you've got a whole bunch of other ones going on in your head?
Apparently not. Apparently I'm used to chaos in there. It seems to work out.
Well, Monona, in this book, let's go back and tell our listeners a bit about this book so it sort of set the stage for them so they understand what you're writing about in Obsessions.
Well, the backstory on Monona is she grew up on a farm in Iowa with her twin sister, and she went off to school and went off to journalism school, and her sister stayed on the farm, got married. And Monona was a career woman, and she was fabulously successful. She wound up being the page two columnist for the Chicago Tribune, which is, you know, Mike Royko territory. Mm-hmm. That's heady stuff. And this was all while she was in her 30s. But she had deferred marriage, and as she got a little older, she wanted a little more out of life. And she married a guy who is pretty much her opposite. He is he's a financial analyst, which she is definitely not. She is a Catholic. He's sort of a smarty pants agnostic atheist, and they talk about that sometimes. And they decided they wanted to quit the fast track life of Chicago and find a nice bucolic little small town in Wisconsin and settle down there. So they settled down in Mitchell, Wisconsin, which I made up based on a couple of towns which everybody will be able to recognize. And immediately, of course, people start getting murdered. So it's not quite as bucolic as they thought it was going to be. And she gets a job as a community newspaper editor, which she thought was going to be a lot less stressful than writing for the Trib. Ha ha. So, you know, it's this whole new lifestyle for them. They don't know anybody in town. And it develops from there. But first, the guy who runs the diner in town is murdered, and then the parish priest is murdered, and, you know, chaos is really breaking out in this little town. And she winds up being the one to solve the murders, much to her chagrin and her husband's concern. I mean, he doesn't want her out here confronting murderers. So she, at the
probably
end of each book,
she
swears off. She says, never again. I just want to settle down and be a small-town newspaper editor. But then, of course, it happens again. So in this one, she's up in the North Woods at a writer's conference, which is actually a birthday present from her husband. And she thinks she's just going to be able to kick back and enjoy the conference. And, of course, the writer in residence gets killed, and she winds up finding out who did it.
Well, it's a fun story.
Thank you. I'm glad.
And I wanted to give Ruth a chance from Shawna a chance to join in before we sign off here. Ruth, hello.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hey, hello, Marshall.
Hello, Ruth.
You don't know me, but your name is very familiar to me through the years of attending some of your classes on the radio or the contests and things like that.
Yeah, how nice.
Well, anyhow, I think you could explain to me. I have written 70 books.
70? 70
books.
My
They're
goodness.
All packed in a case. They're one for every year of my life since
wow.
I was 15. And the only readers are going to be my family after I'm passed on.
Good
so,
for you. What a treasure you are giving to them.
Well, I was going to say, so what? And I look through. But I am a compulsive writer every day. Never does a day go by that without sitting down. So,
Ruth, you and I know it's compulsive, but tell other people it's discipline.
Tell
non-writers it's discipline.
But I was wondering, so what? So what if I can do with something like this?
Oh, I was telling Larry off mic, I wrote a book about my dad and had, I think, 7 copies made for people in the family and, you know, never with no intention of publishing it. And I have gotten more satisfaction, I think, out of doing that. And I actually wrote a book for my son, and that's an audience of one. He's got one and I've got one. And I think it's a wonderful thing to do. I think it's a treasure for the family. I think it's a great process of discovery for you. And I don't think you need to justify it on any other grounds. It's a wonderful thing to do.
A wonderful thing to do for you and for your family.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Ruth, very much.
Thanks, Ruth.
Marshall, thank you. Now, you've got, again, tonight, your
6 o'clock. Book for Murder, which is 2701 University Avenue in the little shopping center out there across from the VA hospital.
In Madison.
Brand new owner, great little independent store. It's been there 20 years, and I hope folks will turn out and have some fun.
And any more in the online or coming up? Any more places that you'll be appearing? Or
I will be in Eau Claire at the library there. I'm going to be in Stillwater, Minnesota next week. Next week I'm going to be at the La Crosse Public Library on Tuesday. So anybody who's in the area might want to turn out for that.
Marshall, thanks so much. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Larry. Thanks for having me on the show.
Marshall Cook is the author of 4 books in the Monona Quinn Mystery Series. The latest just out is titled Obsessions, published by Bleak House Books. He's got many other books that he's written as well, but talking today about his mystery series and about writing. It's always fun, and you'll come back, won't you, Marshall?
Absolutely.
I'd love to have you back. Marshall Cook, our guest today. And we have some more guests coming up as well, changing topics, and we'll turn our attention to the skies and talk astronomy next year on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.